I'm going to show you some images of persons. Persons who are within and from and near the life of our own congregation. There'll probably be some faces there that you recognize. Some there that you don't. It may be that there are some pictures there of people who are alive today. And some pictures of those who are not. This first one is Tony. Tony Frazier. He kind of comes along our Savior's. He actually joined here a few years ago, just before he was deployed to Afghanistan. He was baptized right in that font the next day, climbing aboard an aircraft to go and do his part. The next one here I want to show you is Alan. I guess you could give that away because his name is right on there. But when you look at the years of his service, you see maybe a tiny bit of something why he doesn't look happy. How about Killian? Killian Karras. I know there are some folks kind of grinning with that name. You might actually see some cousins here, because Nick is the next one. Nick, this is right when he's getting back from Iraq with Grandpa. Went to meet him there that day. The next one is Stephen. Stephen usually sits over there with Amy and his daughter. Stephen is right now on board a ship. There's some promise, some hope that he'll be back before the end of the year, back here to us. You remember when we prayed for him just before he left. And Henry, he's not in his uniform, but Henry Harris, of course, is related to the O'Donnell crowd, and you've met him, you know him. This one, I wonder if you can tell. Look at the woman on the right. Can you figure out who she is? Look. Close. We'll go one more image. Can you tell now? Leisha. Yeah, that's Leisha Brown. Let's see. Cody is next. Another one of those cousins. Cody Hemmonson in the Air Force. How about this next one? I think my acolyte might figure this one out. It's Della. It's Mom. Yeah. Della Hassler. How about this one? I'll give you a hint. This is World War II. Stationed first in India, flew bombers. I don't know how many missions, zillions and zillions. Over the 2.5 years that he was there, he had malaria 6 times, I think. That's Walt Hellis. Sharon and Susan sent me pictures of him after the war, too. And you'd just see in the span of those 30 months or so, it looks like he put on years and years and years of life. How about the next one? Yeah, he's in there somewhere. I don't know which one. Next one. This is Elwin. Elwin Anderson, do you remember Elwin? And what's he got in his arms? The pigeon, yeah. We used to call him Elwin the Birdman. He was part of the signal, part of the communications corps that actually used those animals to send messages back and forth to places of some importance. How about the next one? I like this. I like the teeth on this one. Can you tell who that one is? That's Chris Hoiby. How about the next one? Yeah, that's Glenn Heumann. He's I think everywhere he goes, he's the boss somewhere. How about the next one? This one might be tougher to see, and you almost have to kind of pinch Jim Henshaw to see, but right behind the bugler, over the shoulder behind the bugler, that is Robert Henshaw. That's Jim Henshaw's dad. And then just beside the bugler, that's Jack. That's Jim Henshaw's uncle. I think that was in, was it 1930s? Where's Jim? I could ask him. 36, he says. Okay, let's go another one. This one's harder to tell unless you look close at his chest. Ron is squirming a little bit. We got a better picture of Ron David. Yeah. Thank you, Chris. It just seems a fitting thing that on a time like this, we stop. We stop and recall so many and remember such persons. Recognize their sacrifice, their commitment. We appreciate the cost to them of what they have done, the commitment that has been required, their honorable and active service. These are people who have pledged themselves, who have committed themselves to protect, and to guard and to risk and to do the right thing, even when it's hard, to stand up sometimes when nobody else would, for the sake of justice and for the sake of peace, for the well-being of all people. As Sean and I were getting ready for today, we knew we wanted to include some music fitting of the day. But it occurred to both of us simultaneously that we wanted music, yes, that would be fitting, but music that wouldn't glorify war. Music that would rouse us, but not music that would celebrate something awful. And this one came to mind from 150 years ago. "Mine eyes have seen the glory of the coming of the Lord. He is trampling out the vintage where the grapes of wrath are stored. He hath loosed the fateful lightning of his terrible swift sword." His, you know this one. "I have seen him in the watchfires of 100 circling camps. They builded him an altar in the evening dews and damps. I can read his righteous sentence by the dim and flaring lamps. His day is marching on. I have read a fiery gospel writ in burnished rows of steel. As ye deal with my contemners, so with you my grace shall deal. Let the hero born of woman crush the serpent with his heel, since God is marching on. He has sounded forth a trumpet that shall never call retreat. He is sifting out the hearts of men before his judgment seat. Oh, be swift my soul to answer him, be jubilant my feet. Our God is marching on." Oh, this one, "In the beauty of the lilies, Christ was born across the sea, with a glory in his bosom that transfigures you and me. As he died to make men holy, let us die to make men free, while God is marching on." Did Roman centurions of antiquity, did they have any songs like that? Any patriotic poems that would have made their hearts beat a little bit faster? Did they have things that would have made them stand up a little straighter? Maybe songs that they sang that would make them feel more brave and more strong, more ready to face what was ahead? Luke's gospel includes one of these fascinating episodes when an officer encounters Jesus. Now, he was a centurion, so use your noggin a little bit. A centurion is likely in charge of what? Of 100, okay? So this is a person of some rank, a person of some status. It's an interesting account because it shines a light on a person that at first you might think would have been hated. It shines light on a person in a place that you might think would not be lifted up as an example of anything, let alone of faith, right? He's a Roman. Patui! Right? He's not only a Roman, he's a soldier. He's a Roman soldier, leader of soldiers. If there was a bad guy in the story, he must be it, right? And yet there's more, according to Luke, because he says that this centurion is the very one who is eager for Jesus' help. He is the very one who longs for Jesus to come to his household to heal his slave, his servant. We don't know the nature of that relationship. It doesn't say, but it is obviously someone beloved to him, someone important. He's eager for Jesus' help to bring healing to this one who is close to death. So he sends word to Jesus, please, please come. But then there's this kind of unexpected consultation, right? I mean, the elders of the Jews, you would think that what they would do is kind of lean in close to Jesus and say, you know, he's a Roman, right? But that's not what they say. What do they say? No, they kind of whisper. It's as if they tug on his sleeve and say, Jesus, you know, he's worthy. Jesus, you know, this one, he loves our people. They say to him, Jesus, he's the one who built our synagogue for us. Amazing. You wonder if Jesus hesitated, if he thought twice about what he was about to do. The text says that the centurion sent his friends to call upon Jesus and to address him as Lord. You have to know a little bit of the politics of the time, because after all, not only a Roman, but a Roman soldier and a Roman leader of soldiers, who's Lord? It's not Jesus, right? They would have pounded their chest and raised their hand. Caesar is Lord. Wow, what is going on? He somehow lives in a very complicated world, I think. This soldier, this centurion, this one of divided loyalties, living in this kind of tension between empires, between allegiances. How does he sort that one out? He worked for and participated in an empire that subjugated everything and everyone in its way, and yet he seems quite devoted to Jesus. I think he had a very complicated life, because on the one hand, he was complicit in a system that dehumanized people and extended the brutal and soulless reach of Caesar, and yet he is somehow trusting in his heart the goodness of God by this rabbi from Galilee. Man, how did he sort that out? On the one hand, he enjoyed all the benefits and the prestige and the social advantage given him by the uniform. And yet, he also wanted God's healing for a man that he loved. How complicated. Maybe complicated. Like we're complicated. When you came in today, a lot of you went down the center aisle. A lot of you like to go left and go right. I don't think that's political, but I watched you do that. You passed between those two flags. Do you see? Who's back there between those two flags? Now, take a look. There's Old Glory on one side. And sometimes we call it the church flag or the Christian flag on the other. It is one with a cross emblazoned on it. If we were to stretch it out, you could see that's obviously what it is. We have both. We have both in our space together. And you had to walk between them. Did you feel it? Kind of pulled two ways at once, stretched out just a bit. I watched you walk between them, some of you liberal and some of you conservative. I watched you walk between them, some of you pacifist and some of you with concealed carry permits. I watched you walk between them, some of you vets and some of you not. Some of you with traditional values and some with a more progressive agenda in mind. Some black and white, some male and female, some young and old. Maybe like that centurion, kind of pulled and stretched, yanked in more than one direction at a time, and yet still beloved of God, still included and embraced. That slide that we showed with all the faces of our beloved ones, all those who have worn the uniforms, the first slide there had the phrase, no greater love than this, than what? Than to lay down his life for his friends. The centurion is not the star of the story. It's that rabbi. That rabbi who would stretch out his arms and say yes. Yes to you and to me, left and the right. Say yes. Yes to us all for God's sake. Amen.